Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Ghosh Swami Maharaj Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. ISKCON, Chapter Number 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, Text Number 14. Daivi. Hi Esha Gunamai Mama Maya Durajaya Mam Eva Ye Prapajyante Mayam Metam Todanti Te Daivihi esha gunamayi Mamma maya daratyaya Mameva ye prapajyante Mayam me tam tarantite Daivihi esha gunamayi Mamma maya duratyaya Mameva ye prapadyante Mayam me tam tarantite Daivihi esha gunamayi Mamma maya duratyaya Mameva ye prapajyante Mayam me tam tarantite. Daivi. Transcendental. He. Certainly. Esha. This. Gunamayi. Consisting of the three modes of material nature. Mama, my, Maya, energy, Duratyaya, very difficult to overcome. Mam, unto me, Eva, certainly, yea. Those who prapajyante surrender mayam metam this illusory energy taranti overcome te they. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has innumerable energies, and all these energies are divine. Although the living entities are part of his energies and are thus therefore divine, due to contact with material energy, their original superior power is covered. Being thus covered by material energy, one cannot possibly overcome its influence. As previously stated, both the material and spiritual natures, being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. The living entities belong to the eternal, superior nature of the Lord. But due to contamination by the inferior nature, matter, their illusion is also eternal. The conditioned soul is therefore called Nitya Buddha, or eternally conditioned. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. Just a side point here before we continue with the purport. The higher you go up in the universe, time slows down more and more. So finally you get to that junction between the material and spiritual natures, which is the same as the Buddhistic nirvana, actually. And then time actually becomes to a stop. So there's no time clock. There's no date and time stamp at the juncture between the spiritual and material world. So that's why you can't measure. There's no time that we actually entered the material world. That means if you're here, you've always been here, actually. It's inconceivable because there's no time when you enter. If you're here, you've always been here. And once you go back to Godhead, because there was no time when you left, there's no past, present, and future there, then you're actually eternally there. That's why you're either eternally liberated or you're eternally conditioned. It's a little inconceivable, but if you really think about it, consider all the Shastric statements, like the Prabhupada says, you know, about it, eternally conditioned, eternally liberated. If you understand the way time works, you see, and is conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual world, then it begins to make sense. The difficulty in understanding these principles is that we are currently locked into the time-space continuum. You see, the time-space dimension, I mean to say. We see everything in terms of time because we're locked into time right now. Timelessness is inconceivable for us right now, you see. But once we actually get free of the influence of time, you know, become, you know, regain our eternally liberated position, then it'll all make sense. But right now it's a bit of a stretch to intellectually understand how you can either be eternally liberated or eternally conditioned. But actually both are true. Because timelessness is actually the border is a state of pure timelessness at that juncture between the two dimensions. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy, because material energy is ultimately conducted by the supreme will, which the living entity cannot overcome. Inferior material nature is defined herein as divine nature due to its divine connection and movement by the divine will. Being conducted by divine will, material nature, although inferior, acts so wonderfully in the construction and destruction of the causing manifestation. The Vedas confirm this as follows. Mayam tu prakritam vidvan mayinam tu maheshvaram. Although maya illusion is false or temporary, the background of maya is the supreme magician, the personality of Godhead, who is Maheshwar, the supreme controller. Shvetashvatara Upanishad 4.10. Another meaning of guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly bound by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be helped by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service or Krishna consciousness can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of illusory energy, can order this insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. He orders this release out of his causeless mercy on the surrendered soul and out of his paternal affection for the living entity, who was originally a beloved son of the Lord. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get free from the clutches of the stringent material nature. The words mam eva are also significant. Mam means unto Krishna, Vishnu only, and not Brahma or Shiva. Although Brahma and Shiva are greatly elevated and are almost on the level of Vishnu, it is not possible for such incarnations of Rajagun, passion, and Tamagun, ignorance, to release the conditioned soul from the clutches of Maya. In other words, both Brahma and Shiva are also under the influence of Maya. Only Vishnu is the master of Maya. Therefore, he alone can give release to the conditioned soul. The Vedas, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.8, confirm this in the phrase, Tam eva viridva, or freedom is possible only by understanding Krishna. Even Lord Shiva affirms that liberation can be achieved only by the mercy of Vishnu. Lord Shiva says, Mukti pradato sarveshaṁ Vishnur eva nasaṁśayaha. There is no doubt that Vishnu is the deliverer of liberation for everyone. Om Jnana Timanandasha Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shugurave Nama. So, these transcendental sound vibrations emanating from the lotus mouth of His Divine Grace Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Padiva Chakacharja Astatarasadashi Srimad A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada are the full manifestation of the mercy of Krishna to deliver us from the entanglement within the material nature and to bring us back gradually, eventually to our original position in the spiritual world before we ever came here. As Prabhupada points out, originally, the living entity is a beloved son of the Lord. It's not that we were some impersonal spark or something like that. We were actually the beloved sons of the Lord. We had our sarup, our identities, our relationships with the Lord in the spiritual world. But we thought, well, actually, it's very rare that such a thing happens. In one sense, it's practically never happened, but if you take the, you know, a infinitesimally small fraction of an infinite number of living entities in the spiritual world, then you, even with an infinitesimally small fraction, which is practically zero number of living entities, you can fill up the whole material universe with an infinitude of living entities, because there's actually an infinity of living entities in the spiritual world. The fact is that in order for the jiva to have a meaningful, loving relationship with Krishna, he has to have a free choice. He has to choose. He cannot be forced. He has to have the option to love Krishna or to leave Krishna. And many of the students in my e-course, they say, you know, how is it possible that anyone would ever want to leave the spiritual world? They say it's inconceivable how anyone would ever want to leave the spiritual world. But if you look at it from this angle, it begins to make sense that it's possible, because the possibility, the ability to choose to leave has to be there. Otherwise, everyone's just a robot there. I put a gun on your head, hey, my Sharira Prabhu, and I say, be my friend, and I'm going to shoot. You may say, oh, Sankarshan Prabhu, I'm your friend, but you won't like me. You see, if I put a gun at your head, I threaten, you know, you be nice to me or I'm going to shoot. You say, oh yes, you try to be nice, but you feel no love for me under duress, you see. Love means I put the gun down and I freely give you my love, you see. And then you can choose whether to reciprocate or not. That is love, you see. So that is the position that Krishna takes. He is emanating innumerable living entities from himself, as confirmed in chapter 10. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. Everything emanates from me. From himself, he is emanating innumerable living entities. For what purpose? To expand his own happiness by having more and more and more and more and more loving relationships. So Krishna expands us from himself for those loving relationships, and he, in order for that love to actually be real, he gives us that choice to love him or not to love him. Just like a parent. They don't, you know, tie their children up, put them in a locked cell and, you know, force them. No. The parents give the children the love and hope that the children will reciprocate. You see? So Krishna gives the living entity that free choice. So the possibility must exist of misusing that free choice. It has to exist, otherwise there is no free choice. So possibility indicates probability. There has to be some degree of probability, otherwise it's not possible. If the probability is 0%, there's no possibility of misusing it. So there has to be some degree of probability.
Probability.
Means. What is the meaning? Yeah. I don't know German language. That's a problem. It's similar to possibility, but probability is a term used in a field of mathematics known as probability statistics, where you can actually calculate a certain. It gets. Possibility is there, but probably when you talk about probability, you're talking in a more scientific sense, you see. There's a whole realm of math called probability statistics. So probability indicates, possibility indicates there has to be some degree of probability, which means you can actually calculate a percentage. You know, there's a certain probability. In probability statistics, you can calculate that a certain percentage. So anyway, probability indicates that there will be some percentage of the living entities, the infinite number of living entities in the spiritual world, which will misuse their free will. Now, even if that probability is 0.00000000000001%, if you apply that against infinity, you still have an infinite, you follow? You still have an infinite number of living entities who left the spiritual world. That's the nature of infinity. Even, you know, 0.00000000000000000001% of an infinity is still infinity. So that's how we can get a universe which is full of an infinite number of jivas, actually, in this material world. And it's still a small fraction of the living entities in the spiritual world. So this does in fact happen, and the proof is us. Here we are. We're the beloved sons of the Lord. Prabhupada explains in his introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, we have our swarup. We have our identity. We have our own actual form. We do not come out of formlessness. Because we have our own form, it is called swarup. It's already there. As we explained recently, just like you work for some corporation, you take a leave of absence, your position is there, your placard, you know, your cubicle, your desk, you know, your position, everything's there. But when you return from your leave of absence, then you resume where you left off. So we actually have an identity in the spiritual world. And then we resume it. So in this verse, Krishna is talking about how difficult it is to get back to that original identity. And why is it so difficult? Because this material nature is also a divine energy. As Krishna is all-powerful, this material nature is also all-powerful. Because it's Krishna's energy. Just like if you have a very powerful government, when they build the prison, that prison system is going to be very heavy-duty prison. You see, just like in the U.S., they're a very powerful country. The federal prisons are the heaviest prisons. They're very, 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 very strong. If you get in the, you know, you get one of those heavy-duty federal prisons, There's no way to get out. I mean, it's very heavy. Because the government is strong, the prison is also strong. So this, because this prison of material existence is under the supervision of Krishna, who's the supreme power, therefore this material nature is also very difficult to overcome. But the insider secret, as Krishna reveals here, but if you surrender to me, then it's, as we say in English, it's just a piece of cake. It's easy to get over. You know, getting out of the material world is a piece of cake if you surrender to Krishna. Just a piece of cake. Very easy. And if it wasn't already easy enough, as Krishna confirms here, Lord Chaitanya came and he made it even easier. He says, all you have to do is party. Sing and dance and feast. Just celebrate. But instead of celebrating sex life, you see, celebrate my name. That's a, you can celebrate sex life. Just like we were, I was just recently traveling and preaching in the Fiji Islands, and we went to, on our tour of our preaching tour of various preaching centers, we came, there's two Manajis there who are very fired up. They're both, one Manaji, either one or both of them are MDs. And they work jobs as MD, and then in their free time, they're, you know, opening a center. They're getting, raising donations. They bought a, buying a property and all that. Right now, they're having it in their house. Their house is a preaching center. So we stayed with them. It just happened to be New Year's. And just across the street, there was an all-night New Year's Eve party. And they were whooping it up and hollering all night long. They brought a rock and roll band in. And they were just screaming and shrieking the whole night long. And what was it all? It was simply sex life. You see. So we were hearing how much they get into celebrating the sex life. I don't go to nightclubs. It's been a long time since I went to, you know, in the old days, you know, a rock palace or whatever. We really heard how intense it is. It's been many years since I'd heard such a thing. But all night long, that's all we could hear. Across the street, you know, the rock band was wailing and they were all screaming and shrieking and the whole night, just hour after. And finally, when the sun came up, they went home and went to sleep. And so, but all night long. And what was it? Simply sex. Sex, 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 sex pleasure. Male, female. You know. The rubbing, you see. Simply that rubbing business. Male, female. So, they are celebrating this rubbing business between the male and the female, and we are celebrating the wonderful sensation of the name of Krishna dancing on our tongue. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This wonderful Nam Sankirtan movement will indeed liberate us from this material existence. It will enable us to taste that full nectar for which we are always hankering at every minute. You see, the living being doesn't really want to feel any suffering ever. He wants to always enjoy. People find it inconceivable. Someone just wrote me today, they said, wouldn't it be monotonous in the spiritual world if it's only bliss? You've been thinking, how could you be happy if there's nothing but happiness? There has to be some misery also, so you can be happy. Well, I told him, because you know, in the spiritual world, there are desire trees that fulfill all desires. I said, don't worry. If you want to be in anxiety in order to taste varieties of pleasures, then, you know, Krishna will fulfill your desire. Even if you go back to Godhead, you can still be miserable if you want to be. And actually, there are all kinds of transcendental anxieties going on. You know, rasas going on. You have, you know, Radharani is in anxiety when Abhimanyu will catch her with Krishna. There's all kinds of anxieties going on there. You know, but of course, the whole thing is just a drama. You know, everyone's just having a tremendous fun playing roles, and the whole thing is a drama orchestrated ultimately by Krishna. Of course, you know, he has. Purnamasi is the, you know, the stage director and all that, but he has all kinds of helpers. to orchestrate the whole thing. But the spiritual world, we actually desire to become completely free from all anxiety. That is our actual desire. And that can easily be done through this Krishna consciousness movement, which Srila Prabhupada is the pioneer of spreading it outside of India. It had been spread all over India by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but it had never left India. Bhakti Sanatana Sarasvati Thakur tried to export it. He sent some followers, Van Maharaj and some others, to London. They were unsuccessful. They posed for some photographs with some lords and ladies, and that was about it. No success. But there is one great devotee, very special, empowered devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Lord Krishna, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Sri Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, who was especially empowered to do what no other Vaishnava has done in the history of the world, you see. So now that it has been done, no one else can claim it, actually. Prabhupada's position is unique of all the acharyas in the history. He's the one that did it. No one had ever done it before, and now that it's done, it's done. Prabhupada established this Krishna consciousness movement throughout the entire world. And if you look at the numbers, there was 108 centers when he left, and then it's gone way beyond that now. The numbers are just increasing. More and more people are taking to Krishna consciousness all the time. More and more centers are opening. The movement is just growing. It's just amazing to see, even to go places like, you know, the Doha, which is a Muslim country. It's so heavy. Qatar. Yeah.
Why is that situated?
Qatar, where is it? Yeah. It's over there near the Persian Gulf.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is
Qatar. So it's amazing. It's such a heavy Muslim country. I mean, when you go through the security of the airport, there's some lady, you know, completely covered with a black robe, sitting there reading the Quran, you know. And everywhere people are sitting around reading the Quran. It's a heavy Muslim country where every single woman is covered with their full Muslim attire for ladies, and very, very heavy. The men are all wearing robes. It's Muslim, just Arab-style robes. But yet, there's a flourishing Hare Krishna movement there amongst the Hindus. So enlivening. We went there and gave lecture at Kirtan. We went to one home, and it must have been 300 people in that house, and it was so intense and so enlivening. So right there in the middle of, Muslim loka, there you have, intense Krishna consciousness going on. It's really wonderful to see what Prabhupada has done. By his potency, this movement has just gone everywhere. So traveling and preaching all over the world is very enlivening for us to see how Prabhupada's, even though Prabhupada has left this planet physically in 1977, Prabhupada actually never left. Prabhupada is fully here right now. Prabhupada always felt that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was with him. He was seeing him, he was guiding him, etc. And if we strictly follow Srila Prabhupada, then we will always feel that he is present with us at every moment, that he's seeing what we're doing, and that he's blessing us and guiding us every step of the way, you see. There's two presences of the spiritual master. There's Vani and Vapu. Vapu means his physical form. Prabhupada's Vapu appeared in 1896, departed in 1977. But the Vani, you see, that is the vibrational presence of the spiritual master, his teachings. Srila Prabhupada told us that the Vani, the vibrational presence, is more important than the Vapu. Vapu can be here or not be there. Just like when Prabhupada was on the planet, he was always traveling around, going to the major centers usually. And so I rarely saw Prabhupada. Unless we traveled somewhere to see him, like all the way to the West Coast. He never came to our center in Austin, although he offered to come. Our temple president was afraid we might come in at a so he didn't invite him. Big mistake. But the point is that even though we weren't seeing Prabhupada, maybe every 2 or 3 years we would see him for 2 or 3 days. You see. But we felt his presence very, very strongly. We felt his presence very, very strongly, even though we weren't seeing him that much. Because we were connecting with his vani. So even when Prabhupada left this planet, it was for those of us who had learned the art of how to connect with him through vani, even while he was physically here. It was a great moment of sadness for us, but it wasn't the end of the world. Because we were already serving Prabhupada in separation. Many of us throughout the movement, we hardly saw him. But we were just dedicated to his order. We were, connecting with him through prayer, connecting with him through, our sincere desire to please him, to do that which we know would make him happy. Because we were connecting in that way and not depending on his physical presence. When he did depart, it wasn't a big deal. He was usually on the other side of the planet anyway for many of us. So whether he's on the other side of the planet or the other side of the creation, not that big of a difference, really, for us. You see? We felt that he was with us when he was on the other side of the planet, so now he's on the other side of the creation, and we still feel the same way, that he's just as much with us as he was then. So in this way, we are blessed by the presence of the most powerful, empowered acharya in the history of the world. We are blessed with his presence at every single minute, 24 hours a day. And if we connect with him by reading his books, understanding exactly what he's saying, and he will empower us to do that, especially if we associate with each other and discuss his teachings amongst ourselves. Then we will clearly understand exactly what Prabhupada is saying in all details, and we will fully understand exactly what he wants us to do in all times, all places, and all circumstances. And then if we actually do that, then we will become very, very dear sons and daughters, grandsons and granddaughters of his divine grace Srila Prabhupada, and he will shower unlimited oceans of mercy upon us at every minute. As Prabhupada wrote in a letter, answered one question I had. Actually, I don't know if it was my question. No. In one letter he was saying how that you could have the mercy, Krishna's mercy falling on your head like torrents of rain in the monsoon season. Yeah, that was what he said in the letter. Like torrents of rain in the monsoon season. In India, during the monsoon, the rain can fall unbelievably heavy. Even sometimes out of the monsoon. I was in Vrindavan, which is usually pretty dry. One day the heaviest rain came and the street was flooded practically up to the waist. I remember. In Vrindavan, all of a sudden this huge rain came and the rickshaws were like, the rickshaw walls were going through it, and it was like half, two-thirds of the way up the wheel of the rickshaw. Maybe it wasn't up to the waist. So we can be inundated with the mercy of Krishna. We're just totally inundated. How? By understanding Prabhupada, what he's saying, by, understanding what he wants us to do, and then doing that with complete dedication. The fact is that Srila Prabhupada is empowered to completely transform this planet into the spiritual world. And if we act as his instruments, then we will also, to the degree of our surrender, we will have the same empowerment, you see, to transform this planet from a hellish Kali Yuga nightmare into the Satya Yuga. Srila Prabhupada said we can have another Satya Yuga in the middle of Kali Yuga. 10,000 years Satya Yuga. So you can become an empowered preacher who can actually transform in this world here, Germany, and all over Europe and all over the world, who can transform this planet from Kali Yuga to Satya Yuga. All you have to do is connect with that potency of Srila Prabhupada. And to the degree of your surrender, he will empower you to transform the Kali Yuga into the Satya Yuga. So, this is exciting. I mean, why live a dull, drab existence of simply making a living when you can make a difference on this planet? By your everyday's activity, you can make a difference on this planet. Why not live the exciting life of a spiritual revolutionary to transform this planet from Kali to Satya Yuga? You see, this is what Prabhupada is giving us. He's giving us the opportunity to do that. To these spiritual revolutionaries who turn history 180 degrees around. Right now, Kali Yuga is going deeper and darker, you see. But we have the opportunity to take the Kali Yuga and say, wait, stop, turn around and go the opposite direction. Prabhupada will empower us to act as his instruments to accomplish this to the degree of our surrender to him. So this tendency that I'm seeing nowadays sometimes to doubt Prabhupada, to think, well, you know, Prabhupada didn't have the highest understanding, or, you know, to somehow minimize or relativize Srila Prabhupada is the greatest mistake we could ever make. Because all we're doing is we're disempowering ourselves from our ability to be instruments in his hands, the most powerful acharya in the history of the world, you see. All we're doing is doubting. If we doubt Srila Prabhupada, all we're doing is disempowering ourselves and you know, depriving ourselves of tasting that nectar, that sankirtan ras, you see. So we should be very, very loyal to Srila Prabhupada and understand he is not an ordinary spiritual master. He's not simply another sannyasi of the Gaudiya Math. He is that acharya who fully, he is the only follower of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati who fully was able to manifest the shakti of his Guru Maharaj for spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. Others to some extent, but Prabhupada is the only one who fully manifested that shakti of his Guru Maharaj. That's why he was the only one who had the vision of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. The only one who could do it was Srila Prabhupada. No one else was empowered to do that, only him. So we are most fortunate to somehow or other, in spite of our innumerable disqualifications, to have gotten this opportunity to be, you know, connected with Srila Prabhupada. We have the greatest opportunity, so let us fully capitalize on it and make our lives successful. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes?
You spoke about Vani and Vapu. Many of us in the past were initiated not directly by Prabhupada, some by letter, like mm-hmm. that.
Yes, yes.
So they never actually had the Vapu. I personally was also initiated, but not directly by Prabhupada, two others. But there's a saying in some circles of Vaishnava groups to say, unless you have a direct contact with the Guru, direct physically, you know, speaking, giving you the mantra first or second initiation, the seed of the bhakti will not take place.
So, that's not the proper understanding. I was initiated by a letter. Prabhupada chanted on my beads in London, and he mailed them to me, and he mailed me a letter with my name. So am I to think that the seed of bhakti cannot enter? Do you think Prabhupada would do that to me? He would give me some sort of inferior initiation, would not allow me to become a pure devotee? He would cheat me like that if that was true? No, of course not. So, Prabhupada's full potency was there. Whether that is the power of Srila Prabhupada. whether you came up and got the beads directly from him, from his hand, or you got it through the postal service like I did, there's no difference. There is no difference. And the proof is there's many devotees who got the mantra directly, who are sitting there in front of Prabhupada, they got the mantra, they got the beads from his hand, and they blooped. And I'm going strong after 35 years. I'm proof that that's not true. I can show you the bloop statistics of people who directly got the mantra, who were right there in front of Prabhupada, who got the beads right from his hand, you see, in the physical presence, and they're long gone. They're smoking marijuana, they're having illicit sex, they got hair down to their knees, and I'm going strong. I'm proof that that's wrong. I'm living proof that that concept is wrong. Prabhupada accepted me as his disciple through a letter. And so whatever arrangement Prabhupada made to initiate his disciples, just like in your situation, you are just as potent of a disciple as anyone else, you see. Doesn't matter whether you joined at, you know, 26 Second Avenue or you, you know. You know what I'm saying? Prabhupada's potency was not diminished in any way by, you know, his organization growing and, you know, new initiates getting their name in a different way than the first initiates did. It did not diminish the potency of that initiation to the slightest degree. And even those people who are disciples of Prabhupada's disciples, there's another proof. We can see so many of those persons. I mean, I'm seeing myself traveling all over the world. I'm seeing grand disciples of Prabhupada. And I'm seeing how the potency is not diminished. Anyone, it's simply according to the sincerity of the disciple. Anyone who sincerely wants to connect with Srila Prabhupada's mission, whether they're a disciple, a grand disciple, in the future, great grand disciples, palena parichyate, you can judge by the result. I'm seeing some very, very, very advanced grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada. It's all over the world I see. You know, they have the same spirit, the same mood, just as if Prabhupada was here and they had just joined at 26 Second Avenue. You see, and they directly, you know, sitting there with Swamiji in his room and talking with him. The potency is not diminished. This is called the mystery of disciplic succession. Prabhupada told us that you could say, well, unless you're right there on the chariot with, you know, with Arjuna, forget it. You can't be Krishna conscious unless you happen to be there on the chariot the day that Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. You know, otherwise, forget it. You don't have a chance. But Prabhupada told us that the potency is the same. Just like tonight we have read from the Bhagavad Gita, if according to the purity of our own hearing, we can get just as much benefit. We can become as fully enlightened as Arjuna. If our hearing is on the proper level of purity, if our hearing is of the proper caliber, we can be just enlightened as Arjuna was 5,000 years ago, directly hearing from Krishna's mouth on the chariot. So this is the transcendental mystery of disciplic succession. It may be a little inconceivable for us, but actually, even in this material world, whether I'm sitting in a room hearing a conversation or it's broadcast over a radio, on the radio, I'm still hearing the conversation. Just like you and Vaishnava Prabhu may have some conversation. I may be sitting in the room and hearing your conversation. Or let's say it's being broadcast on the radio and I'm out somewhere, you know, in El Paso, Texas, you know, driving to Los Angeles. And I just tune in and I find, oh my goodness, there's a Vaishnava Prabhu and Hema Sharir are they're having a conversation which is being broadcast on the radio all the way here in Texas. So there's no difference. I can hear you, if I hear you in Texas via the radio or I'm sitting hearing you, I'm still able to understand what you're saying and I'm still able to take advantage of your conversation, the points you all are making to each other, you see. So that is called the mystery of disciplic succession. Papa calls it the mystery of disciplic succession. So the potency is not diminished. Potency is not diminished. Of course, the principle of a living guru, that is there. That's why this whole Rithik idea that, you know, only Prabhupada can be the guru is a bogus thing. Prabhupada wanted that his disciples, those who are strictly following, should become spiritual masters. The principle of a living guru is a valid principle. As long as the guru is actually living on the planet, there's a certain shakti. And, I mean, I experienced it very much. In the many years I was on the planet with Prabhupada, you know, 6 years I was on the planet while he was on the planet, that tribe joined. There was, even though Prabhupada was not physically there most of the time, there was a certain shakti of his physical presence which was very, very prominent and very powerful. Because we were always talking, well, Prabhupada said this, and someone came in, they're always thinking, well, I'll get to see Prabhupada soon, he'll be coming. There was a certain shakti. Prabhupada's presence on this planet carried with it a certain special shakti. That's a fact. It's not there right now. And that's why there has to be living gurus. The principle of living guru is valid. But that living guru who's on the planet can, if need be, you know, do things like Prabhupada do. And, you know, initiate somebody by a letter. That can be done. We know because Prabhupada's a pure devotee. Everything he's doing was guided by Krishna within the heart. We know from Prabhupada's example that those things are bona fide. We know that the initiations he gave through a letter are later on, he even had, you know, even had somebody else pick the names. Or chant on the beads. Because Prabhupada authorized all those things, all those ways of conducting the initiation, we know that those initiations are just as potent as the ones when he did everything, you know, when he built the... In the beginning, Prabhupada did everything. He collected the money, he went shopping, he cut the vegetables, he cooked the feast, he served it out, and he washed the dishes all by himself. Prabhupada did everything. But as the movement grew, Prabhupada gradually engaged us in helping him so he could accomplish more, you see. And the same thing with the initiation. Gradually he engaged, I had a sannyasi do my yajna, Vishnu Janaswami, perform my yajna. That made it easier for Prabhupada to initiate more disciples. He had his sannyasis do the yajnas. And later on he actually had even disciples picking the names and chanting on the beads too. But that did not diminish. Because actually Prabhupada was acting through them. Like maybe someone else chanted on your beads besides Prabhupada, I don't know. But Prabhupada did do that later on. He had the sannyasis chanting the beads. But actually Prabhupada was chanting on the beads through them. It was still Prabhupada chanting on the beads through them. He was using them as his instruments to chant on the beads. Prabhupada was still chanting and sanctifying their beads through the agency of his disciples.
Is there a more clearer explanation in some shastra about these points?
What is it?
Is there a more clearer explanation through shastra?
Are there any more clearer? I'm sure that...
In the shastra, in a way, explains the...
I haven't done a lot of research on this. I'm speaking to you from my own realizations. I haven't done a lot of research. I'll be honest with you, Prabhu. It was never an issue for me. It's a new issue that you've brought up to me tonight. So I'm just speaking, Super Soul is revealing to me these things. So, and Prabhupada, you know, are revealing to me these things. And I'm sure if you did some research on it, you could probably find out a lot more. But Super Soul has given me some realizations about this. It's an interesting concept. But the fact is that those of us who got the beads, you know, somebody else may have chanted on our beads. Or, it's the whole principle of Prabhupada's potency acting. I mean, you know, Prabhupada's potency is not diminished by those who are... Prabhupada's potency does not become diminished by his acting through his agents. That's the real point. He doesn't become diminished. He can still plant the seed of prema bhakti in your heart. Actually, Prabhupada, just by contacting his books, just by touching Prabhupada's book, the seed of bhakti can be planted in your heart. It's that powerful. His books are that powerful. And everyone has direct access to the books. Brahmanda Brahmite Kurna Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadaipai Bhakti Lata Bij, you see. The living entity, after wandering up and down through the Brahmanda, trying to enjoy in so many varieties of ways, is somehow or other, by the grace of Guru and Krishna, he gets the seed of bhakti planted in his heart, you see. Then he becomes most fortunate. There is no one more fortunate. Kona Bhagavan Jeev. So, just by contacting Srila Prabhupada's books, one can get that bhakti seed planted in the heart. These books are so powerful. That's why Prabhupada emphasizes the Strivet books. Some people say, well, you know, that was a strategy from the old days, but it no longer is a valid. No. Prabhupada still wants us to flood this whole planet with these books, because anyone who contacts with these books, they get the seed of bhakti planted in their heart. That's a fact. So we cannot say, well, you know, Prabhupada can no longer act on this plane because his physical vani is now gone. He can't act anymore. No. Prabhupada is fully active now, just as he was before, just as in his physical presence. He's just as active now through these books. Just by contacting these books, the seed of bhakti can be planted in the heart of every living entity on the face of this planet. Therefore, we must flood this planet with Prabhupada's books. They are the most empowered literatures in the history of the world. Prabhupada's books. So if we flood this planet with Srila Prabhupada's books, we will bring a true revolution very quickly to this planet. So any other question?
As you say, Prabhupada is present through his book. Prabhupada is present to the disciples who are giving diksha and chanting on the beat. So is that prevalent still now too?
Is what?
Is that, can be done now too?
Can that be now true?
Can that be done?
Done?
Yes.
What? What's the that?
Just like you said that Prabhupada was chanting on the beach.
Yes, yes.
Through his agent.
Yes, yes.
So can that be done?
No, Hrithik, that you cannot do Hrithik. Because Now Prabhupada said that after his departure, the disciples, the new disciples in our movement, become disciples of his disciples. So by becoming disciple of Prabhupada's disciple, then you're connecting with Prabhupada's full Shakti as a grand disciple. Prabhupada's Shakti then fully manifests by you becoming the disciple of the disciple. Then you get the full Shakti of Prabhupada in that way, now that he's physically gone. That's the way. You had your turn.
Yeah, you in very early in this lecture you made this point that there was a discussion about that it is very hard to think of why really from the spiritual world these eternal souls descended to the material world. And yeah, then my mind was starting to think, and I was guessing two things I was guessing. One thing was like we can go to higher planets. It is possible to get more and more powers, like on CD Loka.
If you want to be diverted from the self-realization path. Yes. If you want to become diverted from the pathway back to home, back to Godhead, you can do. You can develop siddhis by performing the Ashtanga system under the guidance of a powerful yogi. You can go to the Himalayas and seek out a powerful yogi, or go to Kumbh Mela and shop around. You know, you can do that, but I guarantee you, you're going to slow down. You're going to be many lifetimes before you go back to Godhead if you do that. Why not go back in this lifetime? Why do you want to delay your going back to home and suffer longer in the cycle of birth and death?
So I understand now that it is like the state of our consciousness will be in the spiritual world, will be much more like here on earth, in some way simple, and not like when we're I could get Brahma, you know. I could get Brahma and then I could do everything because I would be like some kind of god to the people here on earth. And like when, but when Brahma is going back to spiritual world, then it will be like minimized again to simple consciousness.
But you know what?
Or are they like
even if you compare the power and the freedom of Brahma to the freedom of a tiny little butterfly in the spiritual world, that butterfly in Goloka Vrindavan has more freedom than Brahmaji does. See, Brahmaji is still entrapped by the material nature. We just read that here in this purport. Brahma are greatly and Shiva are greatly elevated. Almost little Vishnu is not possible with such incarnations of Rajagun and Tamagun to release the conditioned soul in the clutches of Maya. You see? So actually, when you achieve your original sarup in the spiritual world, you have complete, total freedom to act in any way. Brahma doesn't have that much freedom as a living entity who regains his sarup in the spiritual world.
Oh, really? Then I have another logic thought. Because in the spiritual world, they have so much freedom. And they have so much, like, I think, unbelievable powers to also think.
You have to understand, in the spiritual world, the kalpa vriksha trees not only can give any kind of fruit that you want, they can give absolutely anything you want, they will give you. The kalpa vriksha trees. Not just fruit. They'll give you anything you want. The wish-fulfilling trees will fulfill any desire you have. Without limit. Absolutely without limit.
But must then there be not for every living being in this material universe some kind one wish that will be fulfilled, that must be like unbelievable cool, because this is a wish from the spiritual world, because they want to somehow go to material world in some way. They had so much freedom there, and we are now here, and we have some way had maybe one wish.
We're prisoners here. We're prisoners here in the mother nature.
But this, there must be like a genuine wish somehow. Like
genuine wish. Genuine wish?
Yeah, genuine wish that we came down here.
Yeah.
Well, Prabhupada gives he refers to the biblical story of Adam and Eve and the forbidden apple. You see, in the paradise they could have whatever they wanted, but there was one thing that was forbidden. As soon as they ate that forbidden apple, they had to leave paradise, you see. So what is the forbidden apple? Desire to be God. As long as all your desires are in the service of God, then there's no end to how much you can have those desires fulfilled. Because in the spiritual world, there are unlimited varieties of desires of the devotees to serve the Lord in millions and millions of different ways. And those desires are all fulfilled, every one of them. There's no unfulfilled desires in the spiritual world of serving the Lord. No one's frustrated there. They want to, they have unfulfilled desires. There is no such thing in the spiritual world. All desires are fulfilled there. Questions more?
Did Prabhupada explain that with this apple? That it means eating of that apple in the paradise?
He gives that, he refers that in a Bhagavatam purport. The forbidden apple, yeah. He mentions that. We can look it up and see exactly how he phrased it, but it's referring to the desire to, that desire which brings you out of the spiritual world, that's actually the forbidden apple. There's different ways to describe that desire, to be the enjoyer, to be independent, But the philosophical principle is, and I can we can look the exact reference up. I have the Veda base on my computer, but the whole idea is that forbidden apple is, you know, the desire to be the supreme. That's the one forbidden fruit, and that takes you out of paradise. You want to eat that fruit, you're out.
I have a further question to that. Guru issue is when a disciple of like Prabhupada, you know, he was certainly advanced. We cannot even know how advanced he was or is still somehow preaching. If he initiates a devotee, a newcomer, but he's not so advanced as we presume Prabhupada was, you know, Uttama platform, but he's maybe on the margin or still on a Kanista platform. So, how much is the truth there? Is it true that the disciple can only make that much advancement?
Oh, okay. So you're asking if there's a disciple of Prabhupada, an initiating guru,
yeah,
and he is, you know, preaching, he's strictly following Prabhupada,
And
let's say he's only a Madhyamadikari, he's not an Uttamadikari.
Mm-hmm.
Can his disciples advance beyond the Madhyamadikari platform?
Yes, that's what it is.
There is, of course, a statement in the Upadeshamrita that you can accept a guru from any category, an Uttamadikari guru, a Madhyamadikari guru, or a Kanishtadikari guru, but you will only advance so far as your spiritual master is advancing. So one has to be careful to find a guru who's Uttamadikari. That's stated by Srila Prabhupada in the Upadeshamrita purport. So let's say there's a course. Sometimes we hear people say, of course, you know, there's no Uttamadikari disciple Prabhupada. You know, they say, of course, you know, we all understand that. But actually, you don't really know that. There were people in the Gaudiya Math who were criticizing Srila Prabhupada for not being a very high-level devotee. What's your proof that someone is not an Uttamadikari? If they're strictly following Prabhupada, they're 24 hours a day engaged in devotional service. And how do you know? You see, how do you know they're not an Uttamadikari? The Uttamadikaris don't advertise. The Uttamadikari takes a very humble position. He doesn't go around advertising, Hey, Prabhus, I'm an Uttamadikari. Of course not. The Uttamadikari, he actually feels that I'm not even a devotee. That's the actual mood of an Uttamadikari. So an Uttamadikari will not advertise that he's an Uttamadikari. So how will you know? You have to read Prabhupada's books. You have to study what are the qualities of a highly advanced Vaishnava. That's what Prabhupada's books are the answer. Prabhupada's books are the answer. You have to read Prabhupada's books and you have to be sincere also. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upiyanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. And even if that spiritual master, Prabhupada said, actually, if one is strictly following, even if one is a Madhyamadikari and he's strictly following, then he can also act as a spiritual master. And because he is, even for the sake of argument, we are to say that, you know, that particular ISKCON guru, for example, is only a Madhyamadikari. He's not an Uttama. But what is he? Who is he connecting his disciples with? He's connecting them with Prabhupada. He's having them read Prabhupada's books, follow Prabhupada's books, worship Prabhupada every day at Guru Puja. The highest level Uttamadikari, Srila Prabhupada. So even if the Guru himself is not an Uttamadikari, which is debatable, he could be. He actually could be. You can read many descriptions of Uttamadikari given in Prabhupada's books. Many, many of the definitions of Uttamadikari apply to many of our devotees, even Madhijis in our society. If you really study the definitions, many of the definitions, I would see that many, many devotees could be put into that category. But even if we assume that they're not, still, because in this movement, everybody is being connected with Prabhupada. We all worship him in Guru Puja. We study his books. You see, we don't study my books, the evening class, or your books. We study Prabhupada's books. Everybody is being connected with Prabhupada in this movement, who is the greatest, the highest level Uttamadi, the most highly empowered Uttama Adhikari in history, Srila Prabhupada. So the connection is there. Everyone's connected with Uttama Adhikari in this movement. Everyone, the highest level Uttama Adhikari, Srila Prabhupada. So nobody is missing out on having that connection with the Uttama Adhikari. So everyone has the full facility to be Uttama Adhikari in this ISKCON movement. Everyone. The best facility for becoming an Uttama Adhikari is right here in ISKCON. Because everyone is solidly connected with the Uttama Adhikari spiritual master.
So a new disciple whose guru is being left, like we have the experience, should he take again shelter because he's been disappointed? But some of them have been disappointed two or three times. And
yeah, it's just like that. There's that game called Musical Chairs, and sometimes ISKCON is like musical gurus also. Of course, this is not new in the history of Vaishnavism. That sometimes someone appears to be a bona fide spiritual master turns out not to be. I mean, you know, it's not surprising. It's not completely new. I mean, it's right there. In fact, we have our list of Mahajanas. And we know one of the 12 Mahajanas, Bali Maharaj. How did he become a Mahajana? Does anybody remember how Bali Maharaj became a Mahajana? By rejecting his guru. He rejected his guru and became one of the 12 great Mahajanas. After he, by rejecting his guru, he became a Mahajana. So rejecting a guru who didn't quite cut the mustard, as we say in English, that's a bona fide Vaishnava principle. If the spiritual master is not bona fide, then one should not follow him. One should get away from him as fast as you can. This is what Bali Maharaj did. He said, okay, Guru Maharaj, I'm out of here. I'm going to give everything to Vamanadeva. So, yes, I'm talking. So, myself being in the position of initiating Guru in our society, with disciples all over the world, you know, there's not so many, maybe 25, but when I'm very well aware of how devastating that is for a disciple. When their spiritual master, you know, has difficulty and doesn't really fulfill his duty. So I understand, and I'm praying every day to Srila Prabhupada that I can fulfill, you know, that come what may, come hell or high water, the bottom line is that, you know, I can never fall down, no matter what may happen. I have to maintain that pure example for my disciples. I mean, everything else may go wrong, you know. I may not be able to collect enough money to, you know, to maintain our ashram, or, you know, my ashram might get repossessed by the government. You know, I might be living on the street or living under a tree. You know, everything else may fail. But there's one thing that I have to make sure that never fails, and that is I chant 16 rounds, I follow the principles, and I stay fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness every day for the sake of my disciples. I understand that I absolutely have to consider that nothing else is important. I may not have any more disciples. It's not that having a number of disciples is important. Even if I just have one disciple, I have to think that my only real service and responsibility is to make sure that I set a perfect example for my disciple. Because when the spiritual master deviates, that's the greatest. It's like taking a knife and stabbing it into the heart of your disciples, as far as I'm concerned. That's the way I feel about it. Like taking a knife and just cutting your disciples' throat. So I'm, from my own personal position, I'm just, you know, I'm praying for the mercy of everybody I can pray to, that I would never, ever, ever deviate from Krishna consciousness for all of eternity, because my disciples are depending on me. They're taking shelter of me. They worship me as, you know, a pure representative of Srila Prabhupada. A person that connects them purely with Srila Prabhupada and the whole disciplic succession. So I understand I have no greater responsibility than they have invested their trust in me, their full trust, that I will take them back to Godhead. So I understand, therefore, I have no greater responsibility, no greater duty than just to hold tightly under Prabhupada's lotus feet, because that's the only way that I can save them. Just like the mountain climbers. You know, each mountain climber has a rope tied to the climber ahead of him. And then the ones behind him, they are tied to him. So I just have to make sure that I stay connected with the climber ahead of me, so that all the climbers after me, they will also be connected. You see? So if I somehow lose my connection with the climber ahead of me, then I'm killing all the people who are following me. You see? I'm killing them. So that's the real mood that, you know, any guru in ISKCON has to have. He can't be concerned with, well, I want to have more disciples, I want to become a famous author. He can't have any other agenda, really. He really can't have any other thought in his mind except how to be a pure representative to fulfill his responsibility as a guru to all of his disciples. So I'm just praying for the mercy of everybody that's willing to bless me. Everyone is willing to bless me, that I will never fall down. Never, ever fall down under any circumstance. I'm just praying for that mercy. Because that is the most devastating thing that can happen to a disciple. Most devastating thing. So I'm just doing everything within my power and begging for as much mercy as I can, that would never, ever, ever, ever happen to me. So I think we're okay.
I just wanted to ask, because I heard many times by initiation one is not connecting himself only with Guru. There is the whole parampara, which one is connecting himself to initiation. So,
that's right. The whole parampara is there. That's true. But it is very disrupting if one's guru goes, because he is the inspiring example for the disciple. That's true that if one joins ISKCON and takes complete shelter of this process, we've seen many examples of persons whose spiritual masters left, and we see that those persons are actually more advanced than their spiritual masters now, because they really connected with Prabhupada's teachings. Their guru helped them. Now, what should they feel about their spiritual master? They should think, if I can save him, he gave me so much kindness. He connected me with Srila Prabhupada. He inspired me to become a follower of Prabhupada by his example, by his words, and now he's had some difficulty. So now, if there's any way that I can say for him, or at least pray for him, that he can come back. Prabhupada actually mentions in one purport how the disciple can save his spiritual master. It's an interesting purport. He says, now I'm feeling crippled in many ways, and he's saying, it's a very interesting purport in the fourth canto, how one of his disciples can take him back to Godhead. Prabhupada is thinking in humility. It's an interesting purport. So we have to understand that this Krishna consciousness process is based on loving reciprocation. It's really based on loving reciprocation. If I receive the loving kindness of a person who gave so much of their time and energy to help me to come to the spiritual platform, then I should think how, and if they are in difficulty, I should be thinking what I can do now to help that person. That's love. So anyway, any other points? Everybody satisfied?
That verse in the Gita where it says even if the person was on the path of Krishna consciousness, commits abominable activities, really, I mean, what is, and he's still considered saintly.
Yeah.
The purport, sorry to say, I didn't explain it fully. What is more abominable than raping your child and so on? How can a person be then more be considered saintly?
It's inconceivable, isn't it, when someone goes that low? All I can say is Krishna knows and I don't. Because Krishna says it. Api chet sridharachiro bhajate mamananya bhaksadari vitsamanchariyaya. It's amazing. Someone, you know, we pray every morning in the Tulsi prayers that even if you have murdered a Brahmin, by doing the parikrama of Tulsi Devi, you can be relieved from that sin. Can you imagine murdering a Brahmin? Oh my God. Even, I mean, I don't know, Prabhu. I'll be honest, how it's possible. It is, but I don't know. I can't understand how it's possible, but it is. It's, my intelligence is not that advanced to understand how Krishna can do. So I have to accept Krishna's words. They can be considered saintly. It doesn't necessarily mean we'll give them, in our society, we'll give them the same position that they had. You know, if a big leader has a very major fall down, we won't give him a big position again. He has to just take a humble position, you know, washing dishes, sweeping the floor. We'll see him as a sadhu, but we probably won't give him that. Generally, we don't give those big positions if someone had a very serious fall down like that. We won't reject them, but, you know, they have to take a humble position. Yes?
Isn't it says that it's accidental if someone is knowingly doing this
mountain? Louder, please.
If someone is accidental fall down.
Well, there's two kinds of fall downs. There's accidental and premeditated. You know, there's a big difference. Now, where do you draw the line? That's debatable. You know, for the person who fell down, they'll say, oh, it was an accident. But Krishna knows. The ultimate decision is whether it was premeditated or accidental. That Krishna is the ultimate person who will make that judgment call, to be honest. He's the ultimate judge in this regard. Or perhaps Yamaraj is the ultimate judge. You know, they both play a role in that. Whether it's premeditated or accidental, you can judge by the result. You see, you can really judge by the result. If someone regains their saintly position, then you know it was accidental. If someone goes deeper and darker into degradation, you know it wasn't accidental. That's how you can judge by the result. Someone has a slip. They slip down. Previously they were a woman hunter and they were out on some kirtan one day and some woman enticed them and they just got carried away, did something they shouldn't have done, and they deeply regretted it and it never happened ever again. And you can understand that was accidental. But if someone starts having an affair, you know, sneaking out to the Brahmachari ashram every night, you know, making a woman pregnant, you know, forget it. That's premeditated. And such a person will have a very difficult time to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. Very difficult time. One has to be honest. If one tries to cheat in the name of Krishna consciousness movement, Prabhupada actually clarified this point to me. He said, once or twice Krishna may excuse, but more than that, he said, then you risk everything being spoiled permanently. He told me that one letter. So this is turning, 9 o'clock, we got to pull the plug. Thank you all very, very much. Raja Vidya, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.